From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to America's most listened to late night talk show, Coast to Coast AM. Next hour, Peter Lavenda joins us, investigative reporter, how the occult is growing into many facets of society. Get ready for that one. Well, here's some stories of the day. European bird flu experts are to hold an emergency meeting on Friday, a day after health officials confirmed what many had long feared there was inevitable, the spread of the deadly H5N1 strain from Asia to Europe. British scientists are also scrutinizing bird flu samples from Romania to determine whether the virus found in three ducks last week was H5N1, which has killed more than 60 people in Asia since 2003. The EU Health and Consumer Protection Commissioner says that a bird flu outbreak in Turkey was indeed H5N1, which first surfaced in Hong Kong 8 years ago, and that Europe should prepare for a pandemic. Meanwhile, in Turkey, police searched cars entering a western Turkish village there, warning people not to touch chickens or turkeys after the European Union confirmed that a strain of bird flu had been detected in poultry there. The Turkish government said it has contained the outbreak of the H5N1 virus, which scientists worry again might mutate into a human virus and then spark this pandemic. Of course, you know my take on that. In a moment, Dr. Mark Siegel will be our guest, author of False Alarm, The Truth About Epidemic of Fear. We're going to talk with him about this. Pamela Anderson's ex-husband, Tommy Lee, burned when a pyrotechnic stunt went wrong at a Motley Crue concert in Casper, Wyoming. Lee was taken to a hospital for treatment, not badly hurt, but they had to cancel part of their concert. He's 43 years old. He's a drummer for that rock group. China's Shenzhou 6 spacecraft is not orbiting exactly as planned and will have to be restored to its original trajectory. The orbit maintenance operation would take place early on Friday morning. Probably is going on right about now. Gravity has drawn Shenzhou 6 too close to Earth. There are two astronauts on board. A posting on an Islamic website accused the United States of fabricating a letter in which Al-Qaeda's number two leader asked for money and laid out the terrorist group's plans for expanding the insurgency in the Middle East. Well, we and Al-Qaeda declare, they say, that there is no truth to these claims. However, the United States government stands behind the authenticity of this letter that apparently was sent by Al-Qaeda's number two leader to the leader in Iraq, al-Zarqawi. A woman clubbed her pregnant neighbor over the head with a baseball bat, drove her to the woods, and cut her belly with a knife in an attempt to steal her baby in the Pittsburgh area. Police say the attack was stopped before her baby was taken after a teenager on an all-terrain vehicle came across the woman. She underwent an emergency cesarean section. All is well at this point. Now, in a moment, our guest will be Dr. Mark Siegel. We're going to talk with him about all this talk about a pandemic with this avian flu in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Mark Siegel, MD, is a practicing internist and associate professor at the New York University School of Medicine and a fellow in the Master Scholar Society at New York University. He is a weekly columnist for the New York Daily News, frequent contributor to the New York Times, the Los Angeles Times, and Washington Post, and a member of the board of contributors at USA Today. Dr. Siegel is also a syndicated columnist for Tribune Media Services. He appears regularly on CNN, the NBC Today Show, and the Fox News Channel. Dr. Siegel was a contributor to the U.S. Senate Finance Committee investigation of the 2001 bioterror crisis. He's our guest this hour on Coast to Coast AM. Dr. Siegel, thank you, by the way, for coming onto the program. I appreciate it.
Oh, it's my pleasure, George. Happy to be here.
This pandemic fear, scare, whatever we want to call it at this point, is it justified?
Well, actually, you hit the nail on the head already. It's the epidemic is actually of fear rather than of a problem. I mean, we're actually protected by a species barrier from this bird flu. I mean, we're talking constantly in terms of a worst case scenario here, and there are many, many scenarios that are not worst case. The thing has not mutated yet, so all the birds we track, it's very worthwhile to do that, and that's a very good public health event to do. But it doesn't predict that the bug is going to mutate at all. It's at least five mutations away from being able to jump human to human. You know, everyone talks about the Spanish flu of 1918, but there's many, many significant differences. First of all, we don't have only black and white photos anymore, and we have antibiotics to treat pneumonia. Most of the people in 1918 died of pneumonia. There was no influenza vaccines then. We have them now. We have antiviral drugs. We didn't live in squalor. We weren't in World War One type conditions. You know, the last two pandemics we had in this century were nothing like the 1918 flu. So again, that's a worst case scenario when they bring that up. And this particular avian flu hasn't mutated yet. And I don't know that listeners around the country realize, but all human flus practically come from avian flus. Our regular yearly flu comes from an avian flu, and many, many, many avian flus do not mutate into a form that goes human to human.
At this point, Dr. Siegel, we've had 60 people worldwide die. A planet of 6 billion plus people have died. 60 people have died on this planet because of this. More people die from food poisoning every year.
Well, that's true. I think chickens are much more of a danger to us when they're not cooked properly. And by the
absolutely.
Way,
absolutely.
And the idea that people have, it's really important to tell the public that, well, of course, there are no birds here at all that have it yet. But even in Asia, if you cook your chicken, even if it had avian flu, it kills it. So you wouldn't die from that.
Because they talk about the mortality rate of the avian flu, they say about 50%+ of people who have gotten it, they die. And, you know, that's a high number. The Spanish flu was 5%. So with that, I guess there's cause to be alarmed. But again, why the fear? I mean, is it justified to try to scare the heck out of us at this point? Is there another motive behind it?
Well, there's a lot of motives behind it, but it doesn't help us at all to be scared. Even this idea that it's a very deadly flu and kills over 50% of people, you know that if it ever did mutate, again, worst case scenario, that number would go way down, because in order to pass human to human, it would become much less lethal. There's a lot of reasons that, you know, that people are scaring us. One, of course, is that whoever is manufacturing the antiviral drug is going to make a lot of money on this. And I think that they're legitimately thinking they have a helpful product, but I would say that product is not one that we really need right now. We don't even have the flu to treat it with. You know, there's something good that can come out of this, which is we do need more preparedness for possible epidemics. We need to have our hospitals ready for things. We need better vaccination policies than we have. So that's shining a spotlight on the right thing. You know, upgrading the vaccine policy would be a great first step in terms of the fact that right now our vaccines are made from chicken egg medium, which takes 3 to 6 months and is expensive. If we switched over to genetic engineering to make flu vaccines, it would be expensive, but then you could actually make them when you need them. So you would then have no rationale for panicking the country years in advance of something. You just have something that you could use if needed, and that would be money well spent. If we stockpile these antiviral drugs and vaccines for a disease that's not present, we're going to end up discarding them in 2 or 3 years and waste billions of dollars.
Last year, we did not take millions of vaccines from the Chiron Corporation because of contamination in its procedures over there in the United Kingdom. Yet the flu was not as bad as everybody had thought, and that was with less vaccines. How come?
Well, that's a very interesting point to bring up. You know, that exact problem with the Chiron company last year is exactly why we need to upgrade the technology of the flu vaccine. But, you know, the reason that even without those vaccines, we had a mild flu season, of course, the virus itself wasn't as bad as we thought. It seems every year we think it's going to be worse than it is. But there's another possibility, which is that the vaccine itself, we tout it as a cure, as a great protector, and this is what we do. We get overly worried about something, and then we look for a panacea, something that's the instant solution to it. So we tend to overrate vaccines. The flu vaccine is helpful, but it's not actually as good as we think it is. It's only about 40 to 60% helpful. In Germany, a country that does not comply very well with vaccines. You know, they only take maybe 25% of their population takes the flu vaccine, yet the number of people that die from the flu in Germany, percentage-wise, is the same as in the United States.
Mm-hmm. You know, I have not had a flu shot. I've never had the flu, doctor. I tell people on this program, you do what you're going to do. I'm not going to tell you. I'm not a doctor. I'm not a medical practitioner. I guess I've been lucky so far.
Well, George, I bet you do the right thing. I mean, obviously, you stay up all night, but if you exercise right and eat properly and don't get overly stressed, that's the best protection against the flu of all. And don't go shaking hands with someone that has the flu.
Absolutely. Build up that immune function system, you know?
But the vaccine is meant for high-risk groups, people with asthma, pregnant women, very old people. Even the elderly have been studied, by the way, in the last few years. And the most recent studies don't show that the flu vaccine really protects them as much as we thought. But we can make a case for vaccinating high-risk groups. I hate to tell you, but the rationale for vaccinating the rest of the country is actually to protect the high-risk groups.
Look, you've written a worldwide book now called False Alarm, The Truth About the Epidemic Fear. The thrust of that, of course, is what we've been talking about tonight, this push to scare people to create this panic. Can't they do, doctor, what they need to do to get organized, to get their ducks in order, so to speak, without trying to scare us all?
I think they can, George. I think the problem is that if you take a scientist out of the laboratory and put him on TV and give him a soundbite, he's going to make what he is working on sound like the worst thing possible. It's self-justifying, but it sends the wrong message, and the media picks up on that message, and it gets broadcast, and the next thing you know, people are copying it and saying it again and again without even thinking about it, and the next thing that happens is the fear epidemic. But I want listeners out there to realize that the real risk to your health is actually fear, because fear releases a bunch of stress hormones into your blood that cause your heart rate to go up, your heart to push too hard, cause you to eat more, smoke more, and you don't exercise as much. So these hormones that we make for fear are unhealthy. They're there in case there's a gorilla hanging over you, some kind of danger that you need to react to, not some chronic, you know, hidden worry that somebody's putting on you.
What happened to SARS? That was a big story a year or so ago. Now no one's talking about that anymore.
Well, I love to bring up SARS because I like to talk about a public health batting average. You know, maybe one day the public health response will hit a home run, but in the meantime, their batting average is very low. And SARS was one where they said, this is going to get you. You have zero immunity to this. It's so infectious. It's flying from Asia to Toronto. You know, let's cordon off the whole continent of Asia. And the truth is that they really guessed wrong about SARS because a year later, in the laboratory, it was discovered that SARS wasn't as infectious as people thought. But I want to know why that later information got buried. It really wasn't broadcast anywhere. So the public lost sight of SARS and was never really told that SARS wasn't as bad as people thought. You get to guess wrong, by the way, but if you keep scaring people constantly about one bug after another, I hope the public catches on after a while.
Well, it becomes Chicken Little. Speaking of chickens again. You know, the sky is falling. The sky is falling, and it never does.
Well, and that's part of what happened with Hurricane Katrina, which is that people down there were warned about so many hurricanes that weren't bad that they weren't ready for one that was. We need a warning system for things that really can endanger us, not for everything that comes along. Right now, bird flu is an easy one for me to talk about. We're protected by a species barrier. We're not birds.
What do you think about the president's wording of using the military to quarantine people if need be in the event of a pandemic?
I think the president was trying to show that he's ready, you know, to take a disaster seriously and react. The problem with that was that it sends the message again that something is in the offing. If he's talking about the military, the public's thinking, when is this going to happen? Next week? You know, am I going to have to hide in my house? So these are the wrong terms to use. They're scare terms, and really, if you get the public scared, they're going to vote for you. So I understand the political rationale, but it's not really appropriate. It's bad for the public. The same thing using a term like weapons of mass destruction. That term was a broad term used to describe every weapon under the sun. Now, we all know that nuclear is a weapon of mass destruction, but a lot of the other weapons that were described, just worst-case scenarios. They scared us silly about anthrax, but anthrax is something that generally would only be a threat to a few individuals. We personalize fear. We're voyeurs, all of us. We hear these stories. We see them on TV. We plug into them, and we think it's going to happen to us well beyond the actual risk.
Have I been accurate? Have I been right? Has it been appropriate for me over the last 6 months to tell people on this vast network of 5 to 10 million listeners every night not to worry about this pandemic?
George, I think you're 100% right. I have two chapters in my book on this, and I wrote my book, you know, 9-10 months ago. I was predicting this then. This was coming because this was just the next thing to attach for the fear mongers to attach to. You are totally right to tell people not to worry about this. You know, if you get an infectious disease expert and you pin him down, he's going to tell you, I don't know if it's going to be this bug. It could be the next bug. I don't know when this is going to happen. There's, you know, at some point over the next 50 years, there's going to be a pandemic. But as I've already started to indicate, I'm not even convinced of what magnitude that would be. We also have immunity built up from all these years of flu shots we've been taking. You haven't, but most of the country has, or many people have, and that provides a partial immunity. There's so many reasons that we can't predict the dire outcome, and especially not in the offing.
In the mid-70s, a mass public immunization program for the swine flu. It was supposed to cause terrible symptoms, epidemic levels. It never materialized.
You know, that's another great one to bring up, because the swine flu scare actually led to people getting Guillain-Barré syndrome, because the vaccine itself in those days was more risky than the flu. Now, you know, just for the sake of accuracy, I want to say that that problem has been solved. I'm not on here to scare people about the flu shot, but that's an example of where a panic caused more harm than good. The same thing was true when smallpox reared its head, because the truth was there was no smallpox here, and the vaccine itself had encephalitis associated with it. People wised up to that, and they nixed that and had to throw out over 200,000 doses. We keep stockpiling vaccines based on fear and then having to discard them.
Now, here we are. We're almost mid-October. We're coming into the flu season, the normal flu season, and there's no talk about it. There's no talk about vaccines. There's no talk about whether the Chiron Corporation has gotten its act together. So what's going on there?
Well, I can give you some updated information on that. Today, the Chiron Corporation actually got their permission to ship their 50 million doses. I don't have mine yet for my patients. And, you know, I think you're right. I think the patients are all diverted by bird flu. They're not worrying about the yearly flu, but the vaccines are now going to be shipped. There's three manufacturers in the United States that make flu vaccine. And the reason that more don't, it's because it's not very profitable. It's a generic product, and with the FDA looking over it, it's got to go through a lot of sterilization techniques. They don't make a lot of money on vaccine doses, so they don't make, and then they have to discard what they don't make. Clearly, there needs to be more of a government involvement in this. But even the flu vaccine, it's another scare. Last year, there was a huge flu vaccine scare. I think if we weren't preoccupied with bird flu, we'd be seeing that now. Reality is, you don't even need a flu shot until 3 weeks before the flu season starts, which is sometime in late December.
Something tells me, Dr. Siegel, it's a major effort to make a lot of money for Big Pharma. What do you think?
I think that's where we're going with this. I mean, that's what's happening with Tamiflu, and that's what's happening with the flu shots. There are some infectious disease experts that believe that you could make a flu shot that lasts 10 years, but then nobody would make any money on it. And stockpiling vaccines is really absurd for a disease that doesn't exist right now.
They talk about people die, 36,000 people die in this country every year because of the normal flu. So, you know, you just do simple mathematics and arithmetic. That's 720 people per state. And I got to tell you, for years, I look at the data for Missouri, where I live in St. Louis and I live here in California. I don't see them reporting 700 plus people die every year because of the flu. Maybe 20, maybe 30. So where do they get this 36,000 number nationwide?
Well, actually, that number stays from year to year. So that's the number. But, you know, I'll tell you the reality of that. And you're bringing up a very good point, and it reiterates this 1918 point I was making before. People don't die of the flu. They die of secondary problems that occur because they're sick to begin with, or they get another infection. You know, you die of pneumonia. You don't really die of the flu. So it's actually more important to get a pneumonia shot if you're elderly or if you have asthma or you have emphysema. The pneumonia shot is more valuable even than the flu shot. So we're calling it flu, but it's usually other things that people die from.
Are you invited to any of these international conferences where these guys and gals get together, these medical people, these experts, and talk about the avian flu?
I've been there, and I am involved in it. And you know, person to person, the debates are less confrontational than you might think, because infectious disease people, for the most part, are pretty rational. So if I say, look, this hasn't mutated yet, we don't know if it's going to mutate, there's five to 20 mutations away, they all nod their head and they reply, yes, you know, it may not be in the offing. This but then the next thing you know, they're talking about it on TV and scaring everyone.
Absolutely. This is so important. Let's keep you for another 30 minutes. Can you do it for phone calls?
My pleasure.
Our guest, Dr. Mark Siegel, his book, False Alarm, The Truth About the Epidemic of Fear. Phone lines are open right now. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And our special guest this hour, Dr. Mark Siegel, author, False Alarm, The Truth About the Epidemic of Fear. We'll take your phone calls when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you with Dr. Mark Siegel. Dr. Siegel, I guess with a handful of manufacturers for these vaccines, even though we don't have a vaccine for the avian flu at this point, I mean, they must be jumping for joy with a worldwide fear here, because all the data I'm reading, people are desperate to get some kind of vaccination.
Well, it's a vaccination against fear, George. That's the thing. It's not so much a vaccination against the bug. It's more against fear. And they are jumping for joy. And in fact, there is a bird flu vaccine that's in the offing. There's one that's been developed, and it's being tested now in the elderly. So, you know, the next thing you know, there'll be 50 million doses of that. And there'll be nobody to take it, really, as far as I'm concerned.
What's the downside for vaccines? Some of them, I guess, just don't work. Is there a ramification here?
Well, you know, it depends on the vaccine. But, yeah, these vaccines, you can get muscle weakness. You can develop some flu-like symptoms from taking the vaccine, nausea. There's generally believed to be no long-term consequence of it, but we haven't really studied it that well. And, by the way, discarding vaccines means putting them into the ground. So that's more chemicals for the environment.
What about thimerosal? Are they putting that in vaccines now?
That's a tough one. You know, thimerosal is out of all the childhood vaccines as of the end of this year, or actually the end of 2006, but it's still in the flu vaccine, as a matter of fact. So, you know, the thimerosal is a controversial topic, because I'm not convinced that it causes autism, but I am convinced it shouldn't be in vaccines, because it's a toxic product with mercury in it.
That's right. Let's go to the phones. East of the Rockies, you're on Coast to Coast with us. Hi there.
Hi.
Yes, go ahead, sir.
Hi, George.
Go ahead, sir.
George, can you hear me?
Yes, I can, but we've got to move on. West of the Rockies, welcome to the program. Hi there.
Hi, George. Hi, doctor. This is Angelo, sir, from Phoenix.
Sure thing.
Doctor, I'm a kidney recipient, 5 years now, transplant, and naturally, you know, the drugs suppress my immune system, and I do receive the flu shots every year, and I even got one this year already. And is there, these guys have succeeded in a way, because here I am, first time caller, long time listener, and I'm calling because of this. I'm wondering, is there any other reason I should have a fear? You kind of subsided that fear already just tonight.
Well, you know, it's very interesting, Angelo. Your fear comes from the fact that you know you're vulnerable because you had a kidney transplant and you're on immunosuppressive drugs. So you're vulnerable to infections. So you're hypersensitive to any news that comes along, but this is hyped news. Your flu shot is a good thing for you to be taking for the yearly flu. And by the way, it's not a live virus in the flu shot, so there's no chance of it doing you harm in that way. But the bird flu is no risk to you whatsoever at this point. It hasn't come to the United States. It hasn't mutated into form that can pass human to human. And it's of zero risk to you right now.
You made one comment. You said if people have been taking the flu shots for years in a row, that their really immune system is getting strong or fighting it against different viruses. Because I've heard some doctors say if you take the flu shot, it's just one type of flu.
The flu shot only lasts for a year, but nobody knows what the long-term effect is of having made those antibodies for that year. And I'm just pointing out, I'm comparing it to that 1918 scenario and saying, well, you know, many years of taking flu shots. Because if you take a flu shot that doesn't match up exactly with the exact flu of the year, it's not worthless. It still carries some immunity. There's a cross-reactivity between flu and flu shots. So there is some value to having been vaccinated. But again, we've got top scientists, not the ones on the loudspeaker, but the ones in the laboratory that are studying these viruses and watching them. And the current avian flu is many mutations away from being able to harm you.
Thank you, Doctor, and thank you, George.
You're welcome. You know, did you see that study taken about a week ago, Doctor, that some doctors will refuse their patients? They just basically said, I'm not going to treat you anymore. Goodbye. If they don't take vaccines. And I don't think that's fair.
No, that's you know why? That's based on this whole idea of protecting society. But again, the role of a doctor is to treat an individual. We're not really the societal police. So I think that you have to, you know, when you treat your patients, and this is goes beyond our discussion tonight, George, but you've got to make your patients comfortable, and that means leaving them in control of their health. You're just an advisor as a doctor. You're not in control. You can't bully your patients. You can't tell them what to do. They have to be comfortable with you, and they have to feel like they're participating in the decisions.
I mean, if a patient of yours came to you and says, Doctor, I just don't want to take the flu shot. I just don't feel comfortable doing it. What would you advise them?
Well, I tell them that, you know, if it depends if they're in a high-risk group, I'll explain to them why I'm suggesting it. But I'll also point out to them how unproven it really is. And I never give them a hard time about it, especially something like a flu shot, which is valuable but not clearly a life-saving issue.
Let's move on to our first-time caller line. You're on the air with Dr. Mark Siegel on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi.
Yeah, go ahead, sir.
Oh, okay, this is Glenn from Gig Harbor, Washington.
Mm-hmm.
And I really appreciate the fact that you're, Dr. Siegel, talking more about the fear of it than the actual happening of it. But one question that I have is the 60 people that have died from this bird flu, how did they die from it? You know, were they kissing the chickens or... I mean, you know, like why is this flu a bigger problem than another flu? And if it is a bigger problem, how did the people that did die die?
That's a very good question. Let me answer that by saying that this flu is very bad for chickens. So one thing I don't want to do tonight is to minimize this. It's a very bad bug for chickens. So a lot of birds are dying from it. But the reason that only 65 people have is because, and you're talking about, you know, millions of birds that have had it, although with all the attempts to control it in the bird population, we actually don't even know how it's doing among birds anymore, because we've gotten rid of a lot of birds to keep it from spreading, and we don't know whether the figures are the ones public health officials are killing or the virus. But the 65 people got it because they weren't just casual chicken handlers. They were real bird handlers that handle these birds regularly on a daily basis. And what the listeners have to realize is there's something biochemical that prevents it from jumping human to human. It's called an envelope. It's what encloses the virus. This virus doesn't have the right kind of envelope to be sneezed from person to person.
And you know, and that's a good point, the fact that these people who have died are around these birds almost 8 to 10 hours a day.
Absolutely. It's true in every case except possibly one. So, you know, it's not a question. And by the way, it's very important when people hear these news accounts, it's now going to ducks, it's going to turkey. Listen, if it spreads in birds, it's still no difference. It's not an indication that it's on the road to a mutation. It has nothing to do with it. It just means that the birds have spread it. It's spread in ducks because the ducks are not dying from it as easily. If the birds die from it, they can't spread it as easily. It has nothing to do with human beings.
A little more than a month, it's Thanksgiving. Everybody eats turkey. Any fears here? As long as you properly cook the bird, are you okay?
My only fear about these birds, about these turkeys, is that maybe they're overstuffed and that maybe we eat too much on Thanksgiving, but the chances of getting some kind of weird flu from them is zero.
Fair enough. International line, where are you calling from?
Canada, British Columbia.
Good. Thank you. Go ahead.
Good morning or good evening, gentlemen. I'm calling about, in Canada, we've had a bird cull in the last couple of years, as I'm sure the world knows, but my question is for the doctor. I would like to know, I've never had a flu. I've never taken a vaccine all the way to childhood. I would like to know what the vaccine actually does to the human body or what it does for it.
Well, what the vaccine does for the human body is it causes the body to make antibodies against influenza A and influenza B. Those antibodies only last for a year, and as George was saying, that enables the vaccine makers to make another 80 million doses the next year. But that's all it does. It only lasts for a year. And, you know, it's also not clear how effective it is, even in the populations that need it the most. I'm talking about the elderly, asthmatics, pregnant women, and the very young and the very old. The main premise behind vaccinating a lot of people in a population is that prevents the spread of the bug so that the people you're really worried about don't get it. You and I can get the flu and do fine with it, but we don't want to then pass it to somebody in a nursing home. So the more people you vaccinate, the more you protect society. But an individual really doesn't get a life or death savings from the flu shot most of the time.
Next up, Wildcard Line, you're on with Dr. Mark Siegel on Coast to Coast. Hi.
Hey there, George and Doctor.
Yes, sir.
It's a pleasure to talk to both of you. It's Mike in Denver. And I just wanted to ask the doctor, you know, I'm a middle-aged guy, I guess I could say I'm middle-aged now. I'm 38. And, you know, relatively healthy, don't get sick very often. And I'm like kind of like George. I don't bother getting a flu shot just because I don't usually get the flu and I don't think it's necessary. But are there any vaccines against anything that an average, healthy, middle-aged man or woman, whatever, should really consider getting or get on a regular basis that you think is really, really important?
Well, you know, that question points out the whole, your question points out the whole reason that vaccines are around. The answer to that is it depends on what you're exposed to. Like, if you're working around needles or blood, you need a vaccine to hepatitis B. That's a great vaccine. If you're traveling to countries like Asia, you need a vaccine to hepatitis B and hepatitis A. You know, there's just been a report today of a couple of cases of polio. Now, there again is a situation where by taking the polio vaccine, we've protected the country rather than the individual. Because if you don't take the polio vaccine, you know, you're not going to get polio. It's just a question of keeping it at bay. If you travel, polio is also a good thing to get. You know, those are the main kinds of things. The flu vaccine is, again, mainly for the high-risk groups, people that are at risk, not of dying of the flu, but of getting the flu and then getting a secondary infection that could do them in, like pneumonia.
Well, perfect. Thank you very much for your info.
Thanks, Mike. And again, if you're going to take the vaccine for the general flu, doctor, when's the best time to get it?
Well, you know, the best time to get it is probably about 3 weeks before the flu season. The flu season out west comes a little bit earlier, like November, December, but in the east it doesn't come till the end of December and January. And in this country, it doesn't peak till then, December and January. So you can take the flu shot about 3 weeks before then. So I figure November is a very good month to get it. So even though Chiron is delayed this year, they're going to be delivering their vaccines now. So there's going to be plenty. And I don't think we're really going to have a shortage this year. But, you know, as the gentleman caller, people in their 50s, 40s, 30s that are very healthy, it's a judgment call. It's not an automatic. You know, a doctor shouldn't be saying, take this vaccine or else. That's just wrong.
What do they do with old vaccines that they just don't use?
They throw them out and they lose the money. The government has to get involved with buying up those vaccines. Otherwise, the manufacturers get more and more unwilling to make them.
Tell me they dump them in our drinking water.
They don't, but they dump them in the ground. So that's almost as bad.
Yeah, that's true. Wildcard Line, welcome to the program. You are on the air with us. Hi there.
Hi there. This is James calling from Ames, Iowa. I had a question. Is there research being done on possibility of having an extra small microchip put in your blood to kill off viruses?
I don't know if they're ready for that yet. Are they, doctor?
Well, you know, they've got to first get that microchip working to develop the vaccines the right way. Keep in mind, we're making vaccines from chicken eggs. I mean, here we are worried about chickens, and we're making vaccines from chickens. I mean, we need to use those microchips first in the way that we know to use them in terms of the technology of making vaccines. I think eventually we're going to get to the point where we have things, you know, like microchips in our bloodstream or ways of, you know, like on Star Trek. That'll happen in 10 or 20 years. Right now, let's start with the real practical stuff.
Some people think that they're actually going to put in identification chips in the vaccines and then pop right into us. What do you think?
Well, that's a way to track us. Then we're talking about Big Brother again, and I would rather stay away from that. I think, you know, one of the things we've been talking about, George, tonight is how to be less invasive and let people
right.
feel it being in control of their own health.
East of the Rockies, you're on with us. Hi there.
Hi, this is Ellis.
Hello, Ellis, and where might you be calling from?
Columbia, Maryland.
Okay, thank you.
I want to thank you, George, for you do a great public service.
I don't know
what your job title is, but thank you very much.
King.
This show brings me a lot of de-stress, and we need that out here. Trust me. I'm educated, University of Maryland. A lot of genetics. I haven't done anything with it yet, but I've been taking care of my family as my mom died. My dad's been sick. My dad's 72, and doctor, thank you for making this a great night. My doctor, my dad's 72. And he's had heart surgery, bypass surgery. Should he get he's got the flu every time he gets the shot. So should I just bypass that and do the pneumonia vaccine, like you said?
Well, I think here's what I'd say. I'd say the pneumonia vaccine for sure is a good idea for him. But keep in mind, I actually don't really think he's gotten the flu from the flu shot, because the flu shot has a dead virus in it. It shouldn't give you the flu.
I agree.
He gets flu-like symptoms. So I would say stick with the flu shot unless it makes him sick. If it's making him sick, then he can't tolerate it. But someone that's had a bypass, 72, I would recommend both shots. The flu, by the way, the pneumonia shot, you only need to get once every 5 years.
Right. Then I just want to thank you very. God bless you for your work you do. George, what happened to Carol Simpson? I just wanted to ask.
You mean Barbara?
Barbara, yeah. Is she okay?
She's doing fine. She's still up there in San Francisco doing a show on our affiliate up there. She's okay. All right, thanks. Appreciate it, and take care of your father. 72 years old, doctor. Once they get up in age, then you really got to watch them with these respiratory viruses, don't you?
Right, that's when you start to worry about pneumonia. We've been misinformed. It's not the flu. It's pneumonia you worry about. The flu can give you pneumonia, but the pneumonia is the problem.
All right, next up, west of the Rockies, it's your turn on Coast to Coast. Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good, sir. Go ahead.
Okay. You said the antibodies only last a year. Is that correct, doctor?
Yes, sir. The antibodies that you make that you make from the flu vaccine only last about a year.
When I get a cold or a flu naturally, and my natural antibodies build up, do those only last a year as well?
Oh, well, that's a great question. Those last longer than a year, but the problem with the common cold is that it comes in so many different varieties that the immunity you had to the last one doesn't help you to the next one. So cold viruses are changing all the time. You know, what they do with flu, by the way, is they look down in South America. They have a tracking system, and they look in South America, and they see what the predominant strain is coming up here, and they try to match it with a chicken egg vaccine 6 months in advance. It's like playing at a crap table, and they usually get it wrong. So that's really why we got to upgrade our technology.
DrSiegel.com is Dr. Mark Siegel's website. It's linked up at coasttocoastamp.com right now. If you want to go to that, the book, False Alarm, where do you get it?
Well, you get it on Amazon.com. You get it in Borders and Barnes & Noble, all bookstores around the country. You get it through my website.
I want to thank you for spending the hour with us. And I think I'm going to make you one of our regulars when it comes to these medical issues, doctor, as long as you will make yourself available to us.
George, I will come back anytime. This is a great pleasure for me.
Okay, thank you. I appreciate
right.
it. Dr. Mark Siegel giving us his views, which are echoing some of the things you've heard on this program before. His views on this avian flu scare. He just does not believe it's going to be a pandemic. I do not. Investigative reporter John Rappaport does not. And some other people do not. So, you know, we'll continue to do some of these stories for you and present the information, and then you make up your own mind. That's what it's all about. Now, in a moment, our guest will be Peter Lavenda. We're going to talk tonight about the occult. As a matter of fact, I've got some symbols of the occult, and I got to tell you, I've seen some people, well-known people, do some of these symbols. That's kind of scary, but we'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. I'm George Norrie.